Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. I'm Matthew Darlitz, editor-in-chief of the Science of Psychotherapy magazine, and I'm here with my managing editor, Richard Hill. Howdy, Richard.
Hi, Matt. Good to see you. How are you going up there? Lots of weather and fires and all kinds of things happening in Australia at the moment.
Lots of fires. It's a very unusual day. It looks like some apocalyptic scene from a movie today. There's thick smoke around and yes, there's a lot of people in a little bit of danger out here with bushfires.
Yes, and friends of mine in England are talking about the floods up north in the UK. So we've got fires in California. There's some pretty serious events going on, and I suppose in the Middle East we've just got war, which is very, very sad.
Yes, yes. So, Richard, before we dive into today, I must apologise to everybody. Last week, we didn't have a show. You and I were busy doing different things and trying to coordinate ourselves in different time zones becomes a little bit of a challenge sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, we did. We had a couple of difficulties with a couple of guests, and we figured that the world would survive without us for a week, and as it seems, it has. So that's distressing, isn't it? Still, but we're here, and we've got a very, very special guest next week. We'll wait till we get that all in the can, and we'll let everybody know shortly.
Yes, that's right. Very exciting. But today it's you and me, and as we've promised, we're going to continue to look at what is happening in the world of research and the science of psychotherapy. So today, Richard, we're going to look at deep sleep.
Yeah, we both looked at this together. I mean, we're interesting folks out there that we came and said, we were actually talking about a couple of subjects. And then we said, well, I've had some things on sleep and I've had some things on sleep. Because what's interesting is we spend a lot of time looking at REM sleep. We have a lot of time looking at the five phases, and I know there's some argument and discussion about the actual delineation of those. But one of the really interesting ones is exactly as you say, this deep sleep area, and you've actually been burrowing around, and there's a whole bunch. I found a couple of things, but you've found a bunch of things really recently diving into the different ways in which this deep sleep, well, there's the slow wave sleep, or what some people call non-REM sleep, which is interesting. So you're most passive in the biological state of things. So I'm going to chuck it over. You jump in. Where are you going to take us with some of this stuff?
Let me kick it off then. So the first study, and we'll leave all of the links, of course, for these studies in the show notes so you can go and dig them out yourself. But the first one is looking at building memories when we're sleeping. And this has to do with a study around something that's called the nucleus reunions. Now, this is a little area. This is a structure that's sort of right in the center where the thalamus is there. And it's involved in this synchronization that happens between the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex when we're in this really deep sleep. And it's been a little bit of a mystery of, you know, how in deep sleep, how the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex synchronize. But they've found that this little area, nucleus reunions, is responsible for this synchronization. And this happens when there is this slow wave sleep happening. So slow wave sleep, that's the deepest stage of sleep during which the brain oscillates at a really slow rate. And there's a lot of things that happen when we're in this slow wave sleep. There's, muscle and brain recovery. There's a lot of repair that happens. We'll talk in a moment about microglia and what happens with the immune system also.
Yeah, because here was where we were talking. I remember that we're refining the knowledge of this. I mean, these nuclei that are all over the brain are beginning to become better understood. And some of them have specific names, but they're starting to get just sort of generic names. I mean, there's a nucleus basalis, there's the medial nuclei. Right. And now we've got this nucleus reunion, which is sort of like, they find it connects stuff.
Yeah.
But this aspect of, we talked about in those deep sleep areas, the neurons are actually moving apart a little bit, creating a bit more spaciousness, which allowed the cerebrospinal fluid to flush out damaging and amyloid collections and so on and so forth. And then recently they've been talking about the fact that it's not so much the neurons themselves that are moving out, but it's the astrocytes that are actually taking some activity. So I think we've still got some knowledge to be sure of. But fundamentally, this deep sleep area aspect of the brain, so REM sleep, yeah, there's certain activity talked about there between the hippocampus and the cortex, but deep sleep between the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex. That's really interesting stuff.
Yeah. So the takeaway for this one is get good deep sleep. And if you've studied hard on a test, for example, and you've slept on it, you can probably thank your nucleus reunions for, turning that knowledge into a little bit more of a long-term memory trace that you can recall.
That's cool. Now, one of the ones that I was looking at was talking about deep sleep as the place where there's the capacity to resolve anxiety, to calm the whole system. It's an anti-anxiolytic phase of it. Now, you've seen that one as well. You found the same stuff, but it was some guys in Berkeley that looked at this capacity for us to utilize this frame of deep sleep as a natural anxiolytic that we need to get each night. Now, remembering that going back to the ultradian rhythms, that we have this hour and a half to 2 hour rhythm, the basic rest activity cycle going through each sleep. So you have several of these through the night, and perhaps you can miss a few of them, but it's this. There's two things. One is the constant disturbance of it. One is the reduction of it because you don't go to sleep properly, shift worker. And the other one is to drugging yourself, where you go into an actual more of an unconscious state and not allow these natural cycles to occur. So there's a few things that can interfere with it. But it was interesting that these guys felt that it provides some of the strongest neural links between sleep and anxiety relief that we've got today. And they just published on November 4th, so it's pretty recent.
Now, what the interesting thing that they sort of, at the end of the study, that they said was that recommending, getting good sleep isn't normally, one of the recommendations when it comes to any sort of anti-anxiety remedy.
Not in the formal education. It's just bizarre, isn't it? I mean, a lot of it we've been talking more and more. Get them in. People are having an affective disorder, anxiety, depression, whatever. What's your sleep? What are you eating? And how much do you exercise? Is becoming more and more, but it's still not highly formalized in education.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've got another one here again on sleeping and learning and forgetting. This is some research out of San Francisco, and they looked at slow oscillations and something called delta waves. And they were able, these are using rat models.
Right.
And learning about, what sort of consolidates memory really well and what doesn't. And so they were looking at slow oscillations and delta waves when we're in deep sleep and whether they can reinforce learning or not. And so what they found was that delta waves, so when we have this activity between the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex, that's all happening along with something that's called spindle cell activity to consolidate a memory.
Yeah.
And then there's these pauses. And within these pauses are called these delta waves. And so they wanted to know, well, what are these delta waves all about? They're a big part of sleep. They haven't been studied very well. And they believe that, it must play a significant role. And so what they did was they were able to, with their rats, able to either, dampen the delta waves or the slow oscillation waves. And what they found was when they dampened the delta waves, memory was better the next day.
Ah,
so the rats were learning how to get water out of something, you know, as a new learning thing for them. And if they dampened the delta waves, the memory was better the next morning.
So is that take the delta waves away or just calm it down so that there's even slower oscillation below the delta?
Well, they just say dampen, so attenuating the delta waves. So I'm not quite...
Attenuating them, yeah. So this sort of thing, which is... And always what's interesting is if there's an improvement by making a slight change to the way we do things by nature now. I mean, there's two things or three things that are interesting, but certainly a couple of them. One is that this is a still developing, evolving process. So there hasn't yet been an evolutionary pressure to achieve this greater level of memory. So, in other words, if the rats are learning something about survival and they survive, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to evolve an improvement or a natural dampening down of their delta waves.
Mm.
So that's an interesting thing, that evolution continues. And evolution is also dependent upon need and demand.
Right.
And the other one is that potentially in the environments that exist, and remembering that lab rats are lab rats, they're not wild,
wild
animals, the degree to which the behaviours that they're exhibiting are less than favourable. And we've got to kind of remember that we're kind of like lab rats. We don't live in the natural environment. We don't live in a broad and expansive things. This thing where we live in a sedentary and non-nomadic existence is a bit like being in a lab. So there are things where we could thrive more. And of course, now everyone's talking about go out into nature more often and you feel a lot better, like dirt. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting that there are processes. There's two aspects.
Yeah.
Continued evolutionary development and actually restricted access to positively evolutionary developed things that we already have. And I look, it'd be interesting to see. Someone send us a lot of money, Matt and I could do this research.
Yes. So that's in. So another aspect. I mean, for us, I mean, the takeaway is get good sleep. But it's interesting to sort of understand some of the intricate things that are going on here. So we see that in sleep with delta waves and slow wave oscillation, there's a push pull happening. There's a competition happening between remembering and forgetting. Where it seems from this study that the delta waves have a lot to do with the forgetting and the slow wave oscillations with the sleep spindles has to do with remembering. There is the aspect of forgetting is awfully important, it seems, in these sleep cycles.
That's sort of like the system saying, well, this isn't worth remembering. It kind of assesses whether something is meaningful and relevant.
Yeah. So the researchers actually say there's a strong drive to forget during sleep.
Hmm.
So one sleeps to forget.
Yeah. One sleeps to forget. One sleeps to reduce anxiety, to take away the emotional or balance the emotional relevance of an event. Which will alter the degree to which we feel the need to remember it for future reference.
Mm, mm. So, I was thinking, well, if delta waves are about forgetting, then, what if we just, what if we could just get rid of the delta waves? But it's not that simple.
Well, then we might forget everything. And then I'd be sitting here talking to someone I've never met before.
No, if we got rid of the delta waves, we'd remember everything.
Oh, we'd remember everything. All right, but that'd be even worse. God.
But there's something. So delta waves also. There's another study that came out in the last month or so, looking at delta waves in this very deep sleep phase that we're in, and it seems that delta waves also they play an essential role in long-term memory formation. As paradoxical as that seems.
So it's complex. Again, like everything else, nature's using similar patterns and similar elements for multiple purposes. And, we're desperately trying through science to understand it. But I think we've said about three or four times now, fundamentally, it'd be great when we understand it all, and the more we understand, the more we can fine-tune. But fundamentally, get sleep. Don't go to bed too late. Don't be looking at your blue screen, into the latter parts of the evening, which we know is a great disturber for sleep.
Yeah.
Try to create situations where you have non-medicated ways of getting comfortable sleep.
Mm.
We're mirroring hands. We do things that self-focus, that attention, that orientation. Lots of these studies that are triggering just fundamentally simple behavior are indicating fundamentally simple behaviors are beneficial for us.
Now, if you're not convinced yet that sleep is terribly, terribly important for yourself and your clients.
Oh my God, we got the steak knives. There's more.
Yes. And you also get the fact that our gut bacteria, these microbiome that's in our gut, it seems that the better sleep that you get, and especially the deeper sleep that you get, the more diverse these fellow bacteria in our gut are. And Richard, we know that our gut biome is very important to our mental health.
Isn't that, wow. I mean, obviously, of course, as you say it, and you say the gut biome, of course it's going to do, because we're a complex system and everything's interconnected, and I'm well aware of this type of process. That's just so fantastic.
Yeah, so our gut bugs need us to have good sleep as well.
Yeah. So, and diversity, and it's having
this
diversity. So the complexity is good as long as it's coordinating and cooperating. It's only when it moves into these conflicting ways, and lack of diversity is very much. And you look out in nature. I mean, this one of the things they talk about with planting. The more diverse you are with your planting, the more monocultured your planting, the more difficulties you have.
Yeah.
Quite fascinating. Quite fascinating the way they do all these things.
But Richard, there's another thing too.
I can't believe it.
So we know that microglia in our central nervous system play a vital role in sort of cleaning up damaged cells, in fighting infection, in helping assist with neuroplasticity. So at the synaptic level.
Yeah, and that's our brain's immune system, and also a stimulation system as well, as you say. Yeah.
It's very multi-pronged. What microglia get up to in the central nervous system, and they do most of their work. Guess when they do most of their work?
I'm guessing something to do with deep sleep.
Yes, that's right. when we're in deep sleep. And so there's things like norepinephrine that, when we're aroused, when we're awake, it does dampen the activity or of the microglia. They seem to go into a bit of a shutdown mode or a hibernation mode. But when that is not in our system, when we're in a deep sleep state, they get to work. And part of that important work is at the synaptic level, helping create these new connections, which of course is new learning.
Yeah.
And so if you're not getting the sleep, the microglia are they're shutting down, they're not doing the work that they should be doing, and so you're not consolidating the previous day's learning. But not only that, you're not sort of, cleaning up things in the central nervous system that should be cleaned up. You're not fighting infections like you could be if you were in deep sleep.
And this is true for right throughout the body, that when we're highly activated, when we're doing a lot of this type of process in the brain as well as in the body, that many of these areas, the maintenance aspects of the body, go into a more dormant or restricted phase, because if you're being very active, then clearly there's something important to do. I think there's probably, and I'm just speculating here, I guess when we're too sedentary, that you also have problems there, because these sorts of areas of activation are acting in a confused thing. So again, we come back to balanced life, working with the systems, taking the flow of energy, the ultradian rhythms, the up energy, and the allowing yourself to pause when you need to pause, to be active when you need to be active, but not to be constantly active nor constantly paused.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting. I just a thought left field. I wonder, you know, with so-called power naps, you know, like at mid-afternoon, you know, having 20 minutes. I don't know myself. I have to look into it, but maybe you know. Do we get into that that deep sleep stage or?
Oh yeah, no. Those little power naps very often are quite deep. They can be. It's the ultradian healing pause, as we call it. It depends on your degree of sleep deprivation.
Right.
Now that deep sleep phase in the five phases is around 15 to 20 minutes for each of these phases. And the deep sleep phase and the REM sleep, they're around that 10, 15, 20 minutes. So you can go into a sudden, very deep sleep and then wake up. And that type of, when you have those little 15, 20 minute naps, the degree to which you're able to regain your sense of conscious engagement with the world can be related to the type of the waveform of sleep that you get into. And sometimes when you get into a deep sleep, but then you're woken up again by someone coming through the door, the phone ringing, whatever, you're really groggy.
Right, right.
Now, when you come out of REM sleep, you have a different grogginess. It's a difficulty to grasp reality. You're still sort of half right in that dreamy state and wondering whether, you know, the doorway is an elephant or, you know, whatever the weird thing you were thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are the concepts of that. And you know, mostly we take our ultradian pauses now in the afternoon, particularly as sleep, because we're quite sleep deprived.
Right, right, yeah.
So, but yeah, you can bounce bang into a very deep sleep and then bounce back out of it. Just
right,
a single element of the cycle.
I'm just wondering, for learning, you know, for kids at school, you know, you have a whole day of learning, and then at 3 o'clock, okay, get an hour's sleep so that you can consolidate all of that learning.
Yeah. No, but actually, no, yeah, that's exactly what the afternoon nap is all about.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes it's through deep sleep as in storing and consolidating, but also it's through a lighter sleep and a REM sleep where there's that conversation, there's that associating that's going on between the experience that you've had. And this is why quite often, what was it, the great one, was it Boron or one of those, whatever the circular one, the guy was trying to figure out what the molecular structure of it was, dozed off to sleep in front of the fire, and it came to him in this afternoon nap dream of the snake eating itself, and he went, oh, great. And
yeah,
suddenly we've got, pardon me if I've got the wrong chemical, but I think it was boron.
Right, right.
So this sort of stuff, so you can get biological recovery mechanisms turned on, you can get meaning making and some of this forgetting and remembering and associating stuff happening in these ultradian pauses. That's why they're so beneficial.
Okay, brilliant. Well, Richard, I can't actually go for a power nap.
Yes, it's a bit early, but I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. So yeah, good takeaway. I think, you know, I'm always talking to clients about their sleep hygiene, and it's just nice to have just a little bit more current information. Sort of when they say, but why?
You know. Yeah, and that's great. So check out all these papers, guys, and hope there's been some of our discussion as prodded some of your own thoughts. I mean, some of the things I've been saying I'm well versed in, but some have been speculative conversation. That's what we want. That's what we need to do. Take the information and create something with it.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, Matt. Love that. That was great.
Looking
well
forward
done
to our special guest next week.
Yes, indeed. Okay, very special. And everybody tune in and be sure to not miss it. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.